Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Okay, so let's jump right into this. You saw the title. We are talking church hurt today. Okay, so first, I want to talk about, well, this is going to be tough without JW because we're going to really miss him on this episode, but we gotta keep going.
He's with us, though.
So we'll try to bring some JW spirit to this. All right, so Black people, we have this ability that allows us to laugh at pain. Mm-hmm. And so at times it's been a skill that we needed to survive. So if we didn't have that, it could be potentially dangerous for us.
Right.
Being consumed with everything that we see, everything that we go through. It could also be potentially dangerous for those that oppress us at times. Mm-hmm. And so that has been used as a coping mechanism, a skill to allow us to endure some of the things that we have had to endure.
Exactly.
In this country. Another tool in that toolkit is our faith. Mm-hmm. And our faith has been a tremendous bulwark against some of the pain that we've had to endure. Whether no matter which faith tradition that you find yourself in, the idea that things will not always be this way, that there is some light at the end of the tunnel, that we will not be the people cursed to bear all the burdens and right. take all of the pain and do all of the work.
Or that there's just this a God that loves you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or that there's a God that loves you. Mm-hmm. And so that has been a way to allow us to translate pain into empathy. I don't know, like,
or just other energy.
Right. And yeah. So this week we find those two magnificent skills colliding in this hashtag church hurt. Yeah. Now I started seeing this on Twitter. We're recording this Wednesday, so this is going to post Sunday unless I decide to post it early just because I'm upset. But I started seeing this, and what was going on was they were jokes on Twitter using the hashtag, as Black Twitter is prone to do. Mm-hmm. You take something that would, you know, normally upset you and you flip it around and you make light of it. And so the first thing I noticed about this was, first of all, I expected something different. I don't know why I expected something different, like people's stories, because I've heard lots of stories. So mm-hmm. But then I got a whole lot of poorly crafted jokes. Like, yeah. I'm really, you know, I love my comedy. I love to laugh and I love a good joke. But these were really cheap to get, you know.
Mm-hmm. Low blows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, just really poor attempts at humor. From a classical humor just construction perspective, it was just bad jokes. So I kind of wanted to talk about this because mm-hmm. personally, as a survivor of church hurt, and you know, to such a degree where we actually talk about this kind of on a weekly basis here on this show, mm-hmm. the demographic that we reach has also experienced a lot of this trauma.
Yes.
And so we felt like we needed to address this today.
So I guess, I mean, you saw it on Twitter, I saw it on Facebook, and of course on Facebook you get a little bit more material, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's not coming down in, I don't know, 160 or 200 whatever characters. Right. But my reaction to it, my understanding of where the hashtag came from, has to do with Leandria Johnson,
yeah.
And her reaction to being taken off a show or something.
So she was at the Essence Fest, okay. and she was pulled because of some comments that she made.
Okay.
Because she was hurt.
Uh-huh.
And so her stuff was like, she was saying, fuck the church, fuck Christianity. And then she had something to say about Marvin Winans, who was dismissive of her mm-hmm. When she met him. And she, like many other gospel artists, look up to Marvin Winans mm-hmm. as kind of like a mentor, even if they've never met, because right. of his ability and what he's been able to do in his career.
Okay.
So she was slighted. She was upset. She posted this. And this is just bare, it was raw emotion.
Right.
And that's the thing about it. Like, you, because maybe she's an artist, people expect her to have this polish at all times.
Right.
Which is not the case. I mean, it's not, and it shouldn't be the expectation of anyone in that position. No. She came back and apologized for some of the stuff that she said, which I don't, you know, I wouldn't have apologized for.
Right.
But again, my livelihood is also not dependent
tied directly to this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that started this whole thing. And then people are making jokes about, like, you know, when the choir sings your favorite song and it's the wrong version, or when you in church all day and you hungry, that's church. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, these are not even clever. Like, right. This is not even. So, yeah, that's how it started.
Okay. So, but what I've seen is, you know, and I've seen a couple of reposts and, like you said, kind of half-baked attempts at making the joke, making mm-hmm. light of some aspect of church life, but putting it under the umbrella of church hurt. And, you know, I was like, this is not going to end well. This is my immediate reaction. I was like, this is not going to go well. One, because that's triggering to people, even for allowing for comedy. And like you said, how we've used it over the years, basically to break up some of the pain that we've been made to feel as we're just living our lives. I just think it's dangerous for us to kind of attack each other like that. It's like a backhanded attack mm-hmm. because somebody could be suffering and they haven't even been able to articulate how that made them feel. So mm-hmm. like I did not see Leandria Johnson's comments or anything like that. I just understood that that's where it came from. But I can wholeheartedly relate to feeling rejected or being tired. You know, you're performing one way, but you're experiencing things a different way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, humanizing both her and Marvin Winans as artists, people are people. And sometimes we have outsized expectations of them, or we imagine them to be much different than how we experience them. But all of that taken together is fueling something that I don't think people understand. And it might tie back to some of the things that we've talked about over different episodes, millennials leaving the church, or people being way more willing to critique mm-hmm. the structure, the hierarchy, the organization, the leadership. This might be a byproduct of that, mm-hmm. but I just don't ever want us to lose our sensitivity to people. Because I saw some lame attempts around me, too. You know what yeah, I mean? Yeah. Where these are people talking about how sex has been used as a weapon against their person or against their livelihood. Right. And then you do have people making these lame jokes about, nah, me too. You know, she thinking that these things are equal.
Yeah. And they're not. And so I identified, at least with the pain that Leandria Johnson was expressing, because one of the areas where I at one point in my life was hurt by the church was as I was going through the process of a divorce mm-hmm. in the church. We've talked about this in a previous episode. Yep. And at the time I'm going through this, I am also a gospel artist. And so I'm responsible now for going into people's into churches. I'm paid now to go into these churches and these venues and perform. And I don't feel like performing. Mm-hmm. I mean, my life is falling apart at this point. But the thing is, the church at that time would not care, would not accept me that I'm going through this state, because this is, you know, I'm hearing God hates divorce and
yeah.
and a lot of cliche things from people who really have never traveled this road before. Yeah. They don't know what this is.
Either they've never traveled it or they're not telling you the truth of their journey.
Right.
And I think and let's think about how we feel when we realize that people that we trusted either lie to us or we are vulnerable and they don't accept us at our most vulnerable point.
Right.
You know, I don't know how you joke about this if you've ever been a part of a church that, you know, makes single women apologize for having babies right. or having sex that created the baby or sits people down. I was a part, you know, I grew up with mm-hmm. people having to sit out of choir and all this other stuff because they were actually people doing people things mm-hmm. but just running up against the policies and the procedures mm-hmm. of the church. It was justified to ostracize them.
Right. That was the behavior.
Yeah. And there was never any follow-up or any care for that person who experienced that rejection. It was almost like the punishment was meant for you to feel it so that maybe you wouldn't
you would
do the same. Yeah, you
yeah.
would stop doing the same behavior. But we know that those things haven't been meted out with equality.
Yeah.
You know, women being treated one way, men being treated another, married people being treated one way, single people being treated another, new to the body Christians being treated differently than, you know, elders in the church or whatever. That stuff is real. People have
right,
damaged family ties. And
I just, like, I'm thinking of that implementation of, or that mode of correction just is illogical to me. I mean, it's like the quote that I know in a military setting, it's like the beatings will continue until morale improves. And that's kind of the way that the church mm-hmm. treats what it views as sin. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to punish you until you get yourself together. Mm-hmm. And this comes from in Corinthians, where there was a guy who was having sex with his father's wife, his stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that he was doing was, the Bible says, unlike what the pagans do. I mean, the dude was just, like, really out there. And so the punishment in that case was to put him, I think it's 2 Corinthians 5, take him, put him out of the church, let the devil get to him
mm-hmm.
in hopes that he would repent. And that is where that mode of correction comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But it is used so liberally, and
right.
it is such a ubiquitous, like, way to handle anything, as opposed to all of the other examples we have in scripture about how you're supposed to restore and how to. So anyway,
mm-hmm.
I get it. Like, church hurt is a real. So the jokes and the post that I saw were not just minimizing church hurt. Mm-hmm. They were dismissive of the concept of church hurt.
Definitely. Picked up on some of that vibe. Like, if your church hurt, it's on you.
Yeah.
If you've been hurt by church, then you need to switch churches, you know. And actually, people, like, not seeing the forest for the trees, going as far as to say the church is made up of the people there. So if you don't like the people there, you should just find another church and all this. And I'm like, but people don't even find another lover when their lover right. is dismissive and hurtful and gaslighting and vindictive and mean.
Right.
You know, they stay with that person for a long time for reasons that maybe they don't understand, and outsiders definitely don't understand. It's not that easy. So when I see people being dismissive, I say life hasn't touched you in a certain way yet. I just feel like it's a lack of experience. Either it's a lack of experience, or, like you alluded to, the beatings continued until your morale improved and you just decided that you don't feel it anymore.
Right.
There are people commenting on, you know, just go to another church, just find another church. And I'm like, sis, somebody already got you. Like, you're almost too dismissive of it. Like, do what I did.
And the church is also, to take that stance, is dismissive of the fact that their pews are emptying. And a big reason why is because church hurt is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real consequence of not handling situations correctly as they come up. So before we get too far down this road, as I'm looking at these dismissive posts about church hurt,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to determine, like, how I would define this if I were speaking to someone.
Okay.
And turns out I didn't have to. It's kind of already defined. Dr. Marlene Winnell defines. Now, this is not church hurt. This is an actual classification.
Okay.
Religious trauma syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. Religious trauma syndrome is defined as a function of both the chronic abuses of harmful religion and the impact of severing one's connection with one's faith and faith community. So it's the combination of the two things, the mm-hmm. actual abuse that occurred
mm-hmm.
and then the distancing of yourself from the abuser or the abusive situation.
Right.
Those two things are, they are independent, but they work collectively
yeah.
to cause this trauma. And so if you think about, like, when you're talking about, like, removing yourself from an abusive situation, that's tough. I mean, you're in there and you're being abused physically, emotionally, however right. you're being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have to make the decision if, you know, how am I going to,
if you can really leave?
Like,
it's a value question, yeah. actually. Like, for someone to propose that you could just leave your branch of Zion, right, is for someone to say, and it doesn't matter how much you love your pastor, and that might have been your pastor your whole life. So that's not just somebody who talks to you on Sundays. That's somebody who is a pillar in your life, whether you still look up to that person the same that you did at 6 as you might at 35, is neither here nor there. That's a 20 plus year relationship, a 30 year relationship. Those aren't easy to sever. It is to broad brush, and or to paint with a broad brush, that there's no value to the parts that make up the church that you're experiencing, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm always here talking about the music. Well, I love the choir, mm-hmm. right? The choir might not have done it. Right. It might have been something that keeps getting hammered home in Bible study, or it might be something that keeps getting hammered home trying to do missionary work, or trying to be a part of the women's ministry, or whatever is going on. The choir is not to blame. And matter of fact, the choir might be actually delivering some of any part of what I might think might be healing in that situation. Right. Because music soothes, right? To the point where sometimes people be like, that's why you shouldn't listen to that secular music, because the devil was a musician and all, and I get it. Wow. Okay, wow. Fine. Okay. But some people relate to different parts of it because that's where they're experiencing their good feelings, right? So if I'm sitting in the pews and I'm struggling with my sexuality, right? And you never miss an opportunity to tell me that I'm going to hell because of who I love. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way my whole life. I kind of want you to be quiet and maybe I'll clock into other parts that make this bearable for me.
Yeah.
I think that's happening for people. It has happened.
So in that case, and we're going to talk about some other types, mm-hmm. but in that case, someone who is attracted to same gender, non-binary, whatever they're attracted to that is outside of the norm of that church or what's acceptable in that church, mm-hmm. has to, and this is from experiences counseling with other people, has to sit there and watch other people be celebrated for the love that they have. They have their partners come in, they're able to be married in the church. They're able to, you know, stand up and make jokes and teach couple sessions, mm-hmm. and show up together. If there's an event, there's a Valentine's event or whatever, they can be there. And then that person who is outside of that group is stuck watching that. Yeah. So that is traumatic. Now the thing is, their options of escape are limited, because mm-hmm. you're sitting now in the pews and you're saying, I don't want to be here. I would just go somewhere else. And then you look around and you're like, where am I going to go?
Right.
Like, where can I go to get options.
Where are you going that is not the same?
Right. That's the thing. some of this trauma is so prevalent and you just can't escape some of it. So right. Like in a case where, and this is, again, not to minimize anything, but let's say you had a relationship with someone and you were mistreated by your church because of that relationship, whether mm-hmm. there was a pregnancy there or whether, you know, there was another relationship that was attached some on either side, mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. You can probably leave and find another church and just hope that nobody finds out what's mm-hmm. going on. That still is trauma,
mm-hmm.
but there still are a few more options available. But then there's other cases like what we're talking about with the LGBTQIA issue. And it may not even be that. It may even be like in my case, it was a fundamental theological difference
yep.
that I know is ubiquitous across all churches. And so there's right. no option. It's important to hear the stories. There's so many different ways that people have been hurt by people mm-hmm. in the church. And when we say church hurt, we're not talking about the church writ large, like the church, that organization, and everyone, you know, the leadership has hurt you, whatever that may be, it may right. have been the case or whatever. It could be anyone in that church.
It can definitely be these microaggressions. My experience has been people who say they mean well, but they're saying very mean things or very judgmental things under the guise of, I'm trying to be a mentor, a role model. I'm a woman or a man of God. And I'm telling you right. And I, you know, I'm giving you this advice. So it's important to say that it's not always the major people who are in the structure or the major players in the organization. It could be that, you know, like that elder, that mother of the church who always makes it her business to ask you whether or not you married
yeah.
or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or somebody who sees, you know, I see things from a women's perspective. I've seen these things happen where, again, I've already said, stop preaching to women and men differently, because that means that they're going to experience two different things when they're trying to communicate. Right. So early in the game, when I was a teenager, I just wondered, you know, why would you sit a female, you know, a woman down for being pregnant, but there's no equal and opposite embarrassment and rejection for the man who made her that way. Yeah. And what I realized was because he don't go to this church. Mm. You see what I mean? So she's going to carry that burden. And I've watched women carry it. I've watched women have to sit down and not be able to come and then have to apologize.
Come forward before you can get back into the hospitality ministry or something like that.
I'm so sorry that I was home. Like, I don't understand. So I've always had a hard time understanding that. On the flip side, I know of people who have done major damage to their families, and church hurt sometimes comes from people not really giving you tools to work through what you're going through. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that anything is more frustrating when you're looking for a plan and somebody's plan for you is, I'm gonna pray for you. You're in my thoughts and prayers, or you know what? You took it the wrong way. Not that the person said it the wrong way
That form of spiritual gaslighting is important. When I asked this question in the Faith Uncut group earlier, we got that specifically as a topic to address how mm-hmm. the church will gaslight that person who has been abused or is a victim into thinking, wait a minute, maybe it's me. Maybe mm-hmm. it's not as bad. Maybe I need to be more holy or more pure or more
whatever. Like you're not enough. Yeah. Like obviously whatever you're working with is not enough, and if that is not the epitome of abuse where somebody is saying you're good but
God can work on you, God is still refining, God could do, it's like, yo, when is enough enough? And you don't know when you've reached a point where you will not be subject to this type of criticism or watchful eye. Like I remember I was at a church and all the women at the church that I talked to knew that this one elder at the church was going to comment on the way that they were dressed if skin was showing or, you know, mm-hmm. skirt is a little too high above the knee or, you know, mm-hmm. cleave. And so they would have to consider this before, as they're getting dressed to go to church, just so they wouldn't have to hear that. And this was a bunch of women at the church, and I'm like, yo, these microaggressions that you're talking about are real things for people. Like, what is that church experience like when you got to figure out, I don't want elder so and so to talk about my, you know, the way I look today, or
to attack my self-esteem, or to second guess my decisions. Oh gosh, to second guess my decisions. There are times where you do need counsel, wise counsel. But I've experienced, like you said, divorce is very tough to go through in a conservative body, or in a body that is valuing marriage over everything, mm-hmm. because it devalues the person in the experience that is seeking the divorce, and it makes light of what it means to come apart. You know what I mean? Like your church can really focus on two people coming together in a marriage, and oh, you should do your premarital counseling, and you should do this, and you should do that, and here's this whole plan for coming together. But in reality, in humanity, in these relationships, sometimes people come apart. I was very surprised during my divorce experience. I knew it had gotten better, but it was still very lacking, and I still found myself open to people second guessing the fact that this was what was necessary, to the point where I had to stand on the same authority that they thought they were standing on. And I was like, so God told me, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not going to ignore how I've sought his presence and his counsel in these decisions and in these thoughts. What do you do when my conclusion, right, it's just different from yours?
You know what though? I've been there, so that's what, but revelation fights are like the best fights to me at church. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because somebody comes to you and says, you know, God, I just want you to know, God had whispered to me while you were up there singing, and he wanted me. And then you just come back, oh, really? Because while I was singing, God yelled at me and said, you need to sit your ass down. Like, you can't win a revelation fight. You can just say anything and it'll be most outlandish mm-hmm. thing you can think of. So anyway, we're talking about some of the abuse that happens. And the abuse mm-hmm. usually happens, like with most abuse, because of some abuse of power, some right. leveraging of power over mm-hmm. something. And this could happen by your senior leaders at the yes. church. This could happen in the usher board. Who's getting on the schedule? Who's on the aisle? This could happen in your hospitality thing.
Trauma.
You know, I mean, it happens in yeah. all.
But these things happen. You know, I'm always talking about organizations.
Yeah.
These things happen wherever humans are going to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Churches are not excluded from having human-based issues, because that's where humans are going to be. So we're going to have issues with communication. We're going to have issues with hierarchy. We're going to have issues with authority, power, distance from that power. We're going to have issues with personality, team forming and teams coming together and teams breaking apart, leadership, all types of stuff, because we're talking about people, and we're talking about people that eventually have to be organized yeah. into some sort of, you know, in some sort of way that makes sense.
Right.
So it's not as easy as just, you know, I was walking up the street and I just decided to minister to somebody, you know, because my heart felt that or whatever. Sometimes that's very invasive, right? So we don't want to make light of those major examples. Abuse, sexual abuse, child abuse, crimes, just other right, crimes that have right. been committed, and people are like, you know, well, you cover for that and you don't do that. We want to also bring up the things that people have probably been thinking, like, it's just me. You know, you've mm-hmm. been convinced that it's just you. No, that person is disrespectful
right.
when they talk to you, and that will do damage over years if you are made to deal with somebody who disrespects you. That person doesn't value you, right? Or you're being manipulated sometimes. And this is not to make these churches out to be evil or anything like that. That's not what we're saying, but you have to be able to take critique.
So here's the thing, like I led with, we are Black in America. We mm-hmm. are the children of survivors of trauma. And because the way they survived that trauma was to, at times, minimize some of the pain that was mm-hmm. going on.
Oh, we have some bad habits,
right?
Definitely.
Right. So you know, somebody takes your spouse and beats them or rapes them or whatever, and you want to fight and kill them, mm-hmm. and somebody's there saying, "Look, don't do that.
You can't
do that. You can't."
And what if they hurt somebody else?
Right. And so these are lessons that we've learned, and even if the trauma is not that, the lesson is still the same. The, mm-hmm. the behavior is still the same. And so that's one of the reasons why it's been possible to take that pain and not internalize it fully and maybe minimize it as a behavior, mm-hmm. as a survival technique.
And the deflection, you yeah. know what I mean?
But at some point, we got to have a conversation saying, okay, when do we get to experience the pain? When do I fully get to acknowledge that this hurts?
So that kind of goes in line with the fact that this movement, this energy to take care of ourselves mentally and emotionally, right? So people have said that they feel more free to do that sometimes outside of a church organization, because now I can give parity to therapy. I can give parity to seeking a healing that is really about me and not about me fitting into a body. This is about me fitting into my body, right? So probably part of the reason that we're reacting to this, you know, not just about some of the tastelessness that we've seen, but it's also the idea that we are joking, laughing, and knowingly participating in something that we know might be causing someone else pain.
Yeah.
Okay. So not the incident that created the church hurt. Now we're talking about the residuals. So we're not talking about whatever Leandria was talking about. We're talking about the fact that people even talk about it at all. Mm. That's what people are joking about. You know, even if you started out dragging her, like, oh, sis, pull yourself together or whatever, it has morphed into, there are a million Leandrias. You don't know them, but in your effort to try to drag her, you've actually dragged everybody else. You've actually disrespected or devalued or otherwise just been trash to, I want to say regular people, but she's a regular person too. You know what I mean? In your effort to joke about her, you've actually made light of your choir member. In your effort to participate and seem cool on social media, you've actually made light of your family member who has decided. Now, when people post stuff, I've always said the power of your share button, the power of the backspace, the power of the delete. As much as people try to separate themselves from their posts, You really can't do that.
It's your post.
That's your post, mm-hmm. right? So it gets to a point where you don't know who you've turned off or who has made a decision about you mm-hmm. from what you posted. Now, if they ever graced you with that explanation, you being trash online and you made light of this and that actually affected me and I just decided not to talk to you, that person would want, oh, you should have given me a chance to explain myself, or I didn't mean it like that. I was just playing. That too is bullshit.
Exactly.
So, and you know, and I've seen people kind of react, and you know, we've had a previous guest on this show, Tia, who I love, who doesn't even let people play on her social media. Why? Because people, the distance makes us feel like we could really get away with saying, you know, slick stuff to one another. And she doesn't allow that to happen. She's not the only person, but it just comes to my mind because I know she's actively engaging, not all of social media, just the people on her page.
Yeah.
You're going to act right when you're here. And I can appreciate that because I feel like that's a reflection of a heart for people. Yeah. You know, it might be a joke to you, but that might put somebody in a tailspin for a little while. You know what I mean?
So one of the ways that I know the trauma that I personally experience is in just theological constructs.
Mm-hmm.
As you grow, you start to understand and see things differently. There's a doctor, his name is Jeffrey Kaufman, and he has this idea of shattered assumption framework. Okay.
Mm.
And what he means by that is whatever trauma you've experienced has completely upended the assumptions that you thought about whatever that space is in, whether that's divorce or, in my case, theology. Like, something has happened that was so traumatic that it irrevocably shattered your worldview. And when that happens, the only way to reconcile that is to build another set of modified assumptions. And so this is one of the things that we're seeing with people who are leaving the church.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are not done with God. They're not done
at
with
all.
They are forming modified assumptions to reconcile the assumptions that were shattered through the trauma that they experienced in the church. So as I'm thinking through, what does the church do to reclaim or repair some of this damage? First of all, the reason why we're doing this show is because that's the first step. You're not listening to these people. You mm-hmm. have to listen to what's going on. You have to validate that this is an experience and own that this happened on our watch.
Mm-hmm.
D. Daniel Thomas, a Unfit Christian, had written something today, a few days ago, about to sign this post,
mm-hmm.
about the leaders and how leaders who end up coming behind, picking up the pieces of someone else who caused church hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm thinking through that, like, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
That you know, when you've had someone that's hurt, they're not going to risk getting hurt again.
Nope.
Which means you don't have any margin of error at that point. Like, you have to be on again. And the people who hurt you are not the ones that's coming back to do the repair.
You can't heal in the same place that you got hurt.
No. Mm-mm. And so the churches that do hurt without acknowledging this, what they're doing is shattering these assumptions and sending people off with no remedy. And then the hope, you know, God sends someone to actually come and say, hey, listen, let's patch this up. Let's work on this.
Mm-hmm.
And that person's job is so difficult because they know that they can't get this wrong. Because what happens if they get this wrong?
Right.
See, the thing about church hurt is the people who are talking about it have survived church hurt. Not mm-hmm. everyone survives this.
Nope.
So whether that's through depression, whether that's through suicide, whether that's through your church hurt was not receiving the medical treatment that you should have because of a piss poor theology that someone had.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've died
mm-hmm.
because someone gave you some shitty theology and you mm-hmm. held it and you mm-hmm. were hurt and it was fatal.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone survives this, but for the survivors, the churches have to acknowledge that they've played a part in this. And in some cases, a major part in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people who have left, they want to come back. So there's digital communities forming online. There's all types of communities forming.
Mm-hmm.
But people still need and value a physical connection.
And a fellowship, yeah.
That's important for us. Like, it's as much as, I mean, we have a Faith Uncut online community. Online doesn't scratch the itch completely. It does some of it because, right. and it's a tremendous benefit because you can connect to people that are not in your geographical sphere.
Yep.
But you can't connect, you can only connect with them so much.
Oh, yeah.
And so if a church were to actually take this seriously and start to address this and start to do the work of repair, they would see those pews start to fill back up.
I'm talking about people would be busting out the doors, like, only because it feels good to be acknowledged where you are. Not always talking about where you should be or even where God might take you to, but just meet me where I am. And I think that, like, I'm sitting here, I'm listening to you say that, and I'm like, I've been through that, where all of my assumptions about a certain thing got turned on their ear. And it took me a while to accept that the only way up was to kind of build something new. There's no point in rebuilding whatever it was, because you don't want the same, because you're going to run into the same wall.
Right.
But then you got to deal with, that might be way too many changes for people. It might be absorbing way too many lies, or realizing that you've absorbed way too many lies. And then you got to be gentle with yourself. So I've seen a quote floating around, be gentle with yourself. You're meeting parts of you that you've never really dealt with before, or you're meeting parts with, you know, parts of yourself that that need your, require your tenderness. Some people don't know what that means. That means that being gentle with yourself sometimes is, I'm not going to church today.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm just not going to go. I don't feel like fighting that battle between where you say I should be and where I feel that I am. Mm-hmm. And that is not always going to reduce down to church hurt as much as it is a person who is hurting, who feels like church is not the healing space for them at that time. But my experience was just that I wanted to take God, Jesus, with me. I'm not going over here. I'm gonna bring you with me. And I probably wouldn't have ever described it as, you know, what is your theology or whatever. We talk about so many different things here that have me constantly thinking all the time, like, what has my experience been? But I know it was important for me to humanize Jesus. I think I had gotten it twisted that he was some sort of untouchable, unreachable type of body. You have to present yourself a certain way. And then and only then, you know what I mean? Will it be a certain type of way? And that had a lot to do with how it was being described to me. I'm talking about being younger.
Mm-hmm.
Then things started to happen. When things started to happen in my life, the loss of a parent, struggling through school, dealing with depression, blah, blah, blah. The image of God took on different facets, because I needed him to be something different. If you say you're everything, right? Mm-hmm. But yet that whatever that everything is not meeting my needs, I need to go deeper and figure out where are your facets, where are your dimensions, honestly, in my life, right? And I've said this, until you are broken, you will not experience that presence as a healer. Until you are hurting, you will not experience that presence as a comforter. You know what I'm saying? Like, people speak in platitudes. He's a healer. He's a comforter. He's a mother to the motherless and a father to the fatherless. It wasn't until I was fatherless.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you walk into certain situations that make God have to become what people have said that he is. I'm telling you that work is happening outside of the church. It is happening personal. For people, their God has gotten too big for your building.
That is exactly what it is. I mean, and that's one of the assumptions for me that just was shattered as I'm going through severe trauma.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around. First of all, I
was like, he's better than this.
Yeah, he has to be. God has to be better than this. And so I'm looking at all of this stuff like, yo, this stuff that y'all told me is not, this is not valuable.
He loves me. He does not love me as I relate in relationship to other people. That is not the contingency for the relationship that I have with him. That was a huge thing. And I'm talking about that thing had me sitting in front of elders in my family, ready to fiercely defend who God had become to me. I'm not here. I'm not finna argue with you about who he is to you.
So that's the other side of this. As you choose to extricate yourself from this church hurt, if you make the decision, so you've been traumatized, you've been a victim, and you survived that. Mm-hmm. Then you say, I'm getting out of here. Mm-hmm. And you make that move. As hard as that is, you're leaving your community, but then you're also leaving, in some cases, your family. So your family is going to be the one that's going to be there saying, when you coming back to church, we miss you at church.
Because you know, it was a part of your tradition. It was a part of the time that you shared together.
Right. So now you're outside of fellowship with your community. Mm-hmm. You're outside of fellowship with your family. And that is a lonely place to be. So and you're already coming from a place of deficit into that.
This is true. But again, I will say that when I was in that lonely place, it felt like probably what Jesus in the wilderness was like. Like, I'm by myself. I'm either going to get to know you or me better, right? Because I'm making choices. I can no longer go along with the status quo or how it's being dictated to me. Something don't feel right. Something's not making sense. And I don't have the energy. I don't have the energy to be phony. I don't have the energy to be fake. And I don't want to just feel better. Okay. So church hurt sometimes probably gets smoothed over because people are like, I feel better today. Mm. But if you really want healing, you're not going to take those feel good days. You're going to sit it out until you really heal. So imagine spraining your ankle, right? And it's you can't walk on it. It's swollen those first few days. You might even need a crutch if it's a severe sprain. Okay, cool. 2 weeks later, you're like, I feel good. I don't need that crutch. And you're going to mess around and break your shit because you did too much. You understand what I'm saying? If you really wanted to heal, though, you'd be like, I might feel better today, but doctor says 6 weeks. I'm going to keep that crutch.
Yeah, that's what healing looks like. That's when you say, I'm okay with this. I'm okay. I can navigate this pain.
Yeah.
And I can get through.
I
don't have to make a joke about it. No. I don't have to.
My heart was just tight because I didn't know there was a name for what I had experienced.
Yeah.
But it was tight because I was like, I know how that feels. Yeah. That is the bottom coming out. That is, people be like, I hit rock bottom. Oh, wait, there's another level. Because rock bottom is only relative to what you've been told it is.
Yeah.
So what happens when you down there? You're like, there's another fucking level. Yeah. That. And from there is where you start rebuilding things. And my experience is, you know, just like we said, we bring this work outside of the building. God has gotten bigger than that building. It's gotten bigger. God in my life has gotten bigger than that building or that organization in my life. And then I find myself saying the things that I learned in that building. Now I'm more than a conqueror. But I fought that fight. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just sitting there trying to go along and get along. I could really care less. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there is freedom in it. But again, I feel like these things go hand in hand because there was a point where I was like, everything is cool. The Bible is good. The fellowship is good. Okay, cool. I'm still going to therapy.
Yeah.
I'm still going to make sure that I'm okay. I can't be preoccupied with how you feel about it, right? We talked about this. Right. Like, people don't know what it's like when people don't know what every person has to go through or deal with to navigate whatever their life has come to be. But you know, short of hurting somebody else, you might just find that on your healing spectrum are some things that you just didn't first consider, that you didn't know were options for you.
Yeah. So for anyone who has experienced, is experiencing some form of church hurt, we see you. We acknowledge that this is a real thing.
Yes. And I'm sending you hugs and just warmth, and you got this, because it's a lot and it's not funny.
And people have been doing this forever. Mm-hmm. So the book of Philippians was written to resolve church conflict, which is a form of church hurt. Corinthians was about pride mm-hmm. and their spiritual gifts. You had Galatians was about legalism. Colossians was about heresy. Church hurt is throughout the New Testament, throughout the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. This is a real thing. You are a person capable of healing from this, capable of surviving this, and you can do this.
Yep.
So fuck them jokes. Good. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.